Okay, then we're going to discuss paper 26, papers 26, accounting policies.
Good afternoon, dear board members. We will now move on to agenda paper 26, which discusses the proposed amendments to IAS 8 on accounting policies and accounting estimates. The proposed amendments to IAS 8 aim to help entities distinguish accounting policies from accounting estimates. The purpose of this meeting is to provide the board with our analysis and our preliminary views on matters identified in the feedback to the exposure draft, including our preliminary views on the project direction. We also discussed our preliminary views with ASAP and Interpretations Committee, and feedback from members of those groups has been incorporated into our analysis in these papers. We welcome any questions or comments you may have on our analysis, but are not asking you to make any decisions at this meeting. We will consider your advice and feedback in developing our final recommendations, which we will present to you at a future meeting. In addition to the cover paper, we included three papers for this meeting. Agenda paper 26B discusses the proposed definition of accounting estimates. Agenda paper 26C discusses other aspects of the proposed amendments, and agenda paper 26D discusses the project direction. We will start with agenda paper 26B. Paragraphs 5 to 34 of that paper present our analysis of the key matters for redeliberation regarding the proposed definition of accounting estimates. Based on our analysis, our preliminary view is that the board should revise that proposed definition to specify that accounting estimates are monetary amounts in the financial statements that are subject to measurement uncertainty. These monetary amounts are outputs of measurement techniques used in applying accounting policies, and an entity uses judgments and assumptions in selecting and applying the applicable measurement techniques. We also think the board should provide the additional clarification set out in paragraph 36 of this paper. I will now pause and ask if you have any comments or questions on our analysis and preliminary views set out in agenda paper 26B.
Thank you. I pretty much agree with your analysis and your sort of direction of travel in this paper. There's just one thing I wanted to check the understanding of and one point I wanted to make. The first is checking my understanding and what you talk about in paragraph 13, for example, where we're focusing in on monetary amount and rather than non-monetary amount, which is slightly different to the way that IS1's drafted at the moment. So it would mean, if I understand it correctly, that if, for example, you changed your assumption about the useful life of an asset, that is non-monetary, but because it would affect your estimation of the amount of depreciation, it would still be part of the change in accounting estimate. It's just sort of as an input to the change in estimate. Is that the logic?
Yes, yeah, that's absolutely correct. So we're saying any effect of changing any input or measurement technique that feeds into the measurement of the accounting estimate itself would be part of the change in estimate.
Okay. Now, I also like the direction that you're going on in terms of the wording of accounting estimate in this paper better than what we had in the exposure draft, because it sort of indirectly addresses a point that the staff know that I spent hours annoying them with at the time of the exposure draft, which was this focus on the words about the level of precision. And because you're suggesting, I think, that we don't have a reference to precision anymore but focus just on measurement uncertainty, I think you maybe inadvertently addressed my point, which makes me happy. And the example that I had was a level one fair value measurement, which I still think is an estimate because you're trying to estimate if I had sold it at the reporting date, what would I have sold it for, and I didn't sell it, so it's sort of a what-if transaction. And there's a very low level of estimation uncertainty because you can see prices in the market, but you don't know for certain if you would have achieved the same price. So I think that's still an accounting estimate. And that focus on precision before, I think, might have inadvertently knocked it out of being an estimate. So by removing those words, you addressed my geeky point. I like it for that reason, too.
François.
I also support the directions, the main suggestions you're making. I have a few comments on those. I agree that the current focus of ICE today is measurement. So when you, in paragraph 32, discuss whether you should expand and conclude not, I support that. I appreciate the reference that you make to measurement uncertainty as defined in the conceptual framework, and eventually would support that this is also done that when it is used, unless it is the basis for definition, and that the definition is brought, of the conceptual framework is brought into understanding itself. I don't agree with the conclusion that you've reached on keeping estimation uncertainty in ICE 1, paragraph 1 to 5, because I really think that we are discussing exactly the same thing, you know, the judgment and exceptions in complex situations. And if you read the supplementing paragraphs to that, paragraph 125 is just about getting to estimates. So I would recommend, in fact, that we align the vocabulary and the references whenever we are discussing the same issue. Another comment is related to what are evaluation techniques, and here I'm referring to what you say in paragraph 23 when you basically consider that what I would call practical expedients would not be evaluation techniques. These practical expedients are evaluation techniques. So I would have a broader notion of what evaluation techniques are. To me, they're not limited to sophisticated mathematical models. They include also straight line allocation and other less sophisticated. And a practical expedient is a way of arriving at an estimate. I would call that evaluation technique. And as a result, the situation that you describe in paragraph 23 would be encompassed in the change in estimate. Finally, two other comments. I read what you said in paragraph 28, 29, and I didn't see that the paragraph IS34 needed a change in the way it put contrast between what is a change in accounting estimate and what is the correction of an error. So but I've not really totally understood the change that you wanted to make. So eventually it's just a misunderstanding on my part. And finally, I support that we introduce examples in part because it's a response to a request that has been made by a number of constituents. But in those examples, I would focus on giving names to various elements so that, useful life used to be considered, a change in useful life used to be considered a change in accounting estimate, exactly in the way you have your paragraph 11 that you also referred to. I would expand that further and explain, what are inputs, evaluation techniques, and illustrate this with elements that people handle in practice. So that would bring clarity in what we put behind those names.
Jen Chow.
Thank you. First, I appreciate the staff's analysis. As you said, that I think the paper is very good. I think addressed almost all the issues we received during the exposure draft, and the staff work hard to try to find a solution to improve the definition we're giving in the exposure draft. Actually, make a significant a lot of improvements made. I generally agree. I want to check that you say paragraph 4A, you say the revised definition of the accounting estimates to specify three elements. So that means in the future, if we are going to develop new definition, all those elements will include in the definition itself, or
the
definition will be long.
Yeah. We'll define that when we're drafting, but they would be part of the definition. It's just whether they go in sort of kind of explain it, whether we have one sentence in the definition and have the remaining two explaining what how that one part works, or whether they are all part of the definition itself. We just haven't worked that out in drafting.
Okay. So. Yeah. The reason I ask that, because with regard to the accounting estimates, actually it's in practice normally relevant three elements. One is input. Sometimes you need to make estimation of the input, as just Sue mentioned, useful life or residual amount of APPE, something like that. So this is simply the input. Secondly, the techniques. You know, we have to make a, select what kind of techniques we should have, such as depreciation method, what kind of method we should have. Finally, that is the output. That is the depreciation, that is the output. The problem is that currently we focus on the output. That is the final amount of the depreciation. So if simply look at the definition directly, it seems that where is the input, where is the, you know, measurement techniques. I know that you try to bring those elements together. So I would like to have those elements all be included in the definition, and especially for the input. And actually, this is the starting point. They should make estimate. If people say, okay, we'll remove that, people will question whether we make a significant changes, because as Sue mentioned, we check that if the people make a changes with regard to the use of life, actually that is exactly the accounting estimate. So from my point of view, I think if we move forward, the basic conclusion or the drafting, we should make those points very clearly. Because if you look at the definition in the exposure draft, it seems that the previous definition focused on input. Now we focus on output. So we should clarify or illustrate the wording very clearly that all input measurement techniques and output, actually, based on our suggestion, will all be regarded as accounting estimate, if I understand it's correct.
Yeah. So just one thing I'll say on that, yes, we'll make it very clear, but I think the way we are proposing the definition is the estimate itself, the accounting estimate itself would be the output, and to develop that output, you would use inputs and measurement, you would apply input and measurement techniques. So input and measurement techniques would be part of what's used to develop the output, which itself would be the accounting estimate. But we'll make it all very clear that any changes in the inputs or measurement techniques is all, everything is part of the change in estimate itself. That's just how we're proposing to go about the definition.
Yes. Paragraph 4B said that those changes in input or measurement techniques will be a part of the changes in accounting estimate. That's very useful. But this is only relevant changes in input. But first in places, the input itself, because when the entities recognize and measurements those items at the recognition date, that is, there are no change at all. But they have to estimate the input and have to select the measurement techniques. I hope those elements also should be make it clear that they are also accounting estimate or be included, you know, yeah. Because paragraph 4B only mentioned the changes in the input and measurement techniques.
Yeah, and I think in one of the paragraphs, and I'm just trying to find that, in one of the paragraphs we tried to explain why we are trying to limit the definition of accounting estimates to monetary amounts that are in the financial statements itself, and how that relates to any non, so like you said, like useful life is an input. Useful life is an input that's used in calculating depreciation. But an entity uses those inputs, those non-monetary amounts, they only use the non-monetary amounts in order to arrive at the monetary amount. So we think what's necessary is to define estimate at the monetary amount. It's not necessary to include input in the definition of the estimate itself. Nonetheless, any changes that you make to that input or any measurement techniques would be part of the change in the estimate. So from an outcome perspective, I think we get to the same outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
But from a definition perspective, we think the definition is a lot cleaner if we could just limit it to monetary amounts that are in the financial statements itself.
Mary?
On this paper, a few points. First of all, overall, I think the direction that the staff is proposing is an improvement. You know, so you talked about some of the changes and why I think they're helpful, and I think in particular the focus on the estimate being the output is a more useful expression and sorts out some of the tangles, including the possible circularity that people cited in the ED. So overall, so these are tuning in that context. One is, and I'm afraid I'm going to address a couple of the items that Francoise raised, and I think I'm probably suggesting a different way forward. So some stress for you sorting us out. One is let me do one that you didn't raise, which is the use of the term monetary amount. I don't know who the ASAF member was who said you're cutting across IS-21. And when you go back and look, we're actually not, because that talks about monetary items and we're talking about monetary amounts. But I think we have to explain it because that's a nuance in vocabulary. And if we don't, I think we're going to get lots of questions about have we predetermined that everything that's measured quantitatively is now monetary for translation purposes. And that's not at all what we're doing. So let's just avoid that confusion. On to a couple of other points. One is I struggled to follow exactly what you were recommending in paragraph 28 and particularly 29. I think we do have to salvage something from the paragraph 5 proposed deletion of a change in estimate is a response to new information, because while some of that text is repeated, it's repeated it more as an example. And I think what existing paragraph 5 that we propose to delete sets out is a constraint that says it's only a change in estimate if it's a result of new information. And I think in particular, regulators found that important because they continually stress over the when is it correction of an error versus when is it a change in estimate. And while IS-8 doesn't have a lot of commentary on that, I think we have to keep the boundaries clear. So if that's what paragraph 29 was trying to say, then I support it. If that's not what 29 was saying, I think we need to add it. So I don't think it's new requirements, but I think the wording as it is in paragraph ISA paragraph 34 is not sufficient to be the discipline that paragraph 5 provides today. And then the other thing about discussion in paragraph 22 of this paper, where you're talking about whether or not we should conform the language in paragraph 32 of IS-8 to the language you're proposing we adopt. While I agree with the staff recommendation not to base your revised definition of accounting estimate on uncertainties inherent in business activities for the reason you described in the paper, I think we've got to remember that this is supposed to be a narrow scope amendment, and we shouldn't start looking through the whole standard and seeing where we should conform language, et cetera, if it isn't absolutely critical. Because when I went back and looked at this paragraph in IS-8, I think it's, again, more of an example or an explanation of why some of these things arise. So I think the language does not need to be conformed, and I just want us to be as disciplined as we can about making only necessary changes in the course of this, which is a narrow scope amendment. Yep.
I'm not so sure if I agree with the benefits really outweighing the cost here. I agree that the staff said, okay, that maybe the costs for repairs are not so high if we're doing that. I would agree to that, but I'm also not sure if the benefits are so high, because are they so substantial that we should really doing that? Because when we started this, I already said, okay, it is narrow scope, because I think the problem is coming from a different angle, because we distinguish between, okay, kind of what is the change in policy and what are the requirements, retrospective versus change in estimate, prospective versus an error, all the different things. And that caused a lot of problems and thousands of regulators, auditors, and accountants trying to distinguish between all of this stuff. Cost a lot of money. If we would have said, okay, that all kind of changes have to be dealt with prospectively and a better disclosure that it was a change, and distinguish between what is really an economic change and what is a change in kind of this kind of valuation methods or accounting policy, I think would be the right way going forward and would save the economy a lot of money. And therefore, now we, with the clarifications, we also take a little bit apart from that, and so I'm not sure if really the cost benefits are okay and if we should do that at all, or even we should say it's good input, but we need a bigger project to really solve the problem. I have not said I have already decided, but I'm not so sure if really that is substantial enough that we are doing that to going forward with.
You're hoping that we're going to discuss this when we get to 26D,
yeah?
More generally,
yeah.
Project direction, cost benefit.
I thought we had everything.
That was just an early mark.
6B.
Sorry.
Couldn't
repeat
wait.
It.
Gary.
Thank you. First of all, I thought I liked this paper a lot and the conclusions and the analysis that was done. And contrary to my friend Martin, I actually think the benefits do outweigh the costs, even if we did nothing beyond this paper or this project. Just a couple of builds and comments I just want to kind of get out there is I like the definition of an estimate largely for the revised or the proposed revised definition of an estimate for the reasons discussed. But I think we got to keep in mind, although in paragraph I think it's 10, we list a handful of examples of balance sheet elements that are driven by estimates. The reality is most of the balance sheet is affected by estimates. And if you want to take our large seminal standard of recent days, IFRS 17, almost the entire thing is an estimate in many respects. Pension obligations are an estimate, and the list just goes on and on. Accrued revenue, you don't think of it, but think of here, we'll get our local utility bills based off a meter, but if that meter is 75 days before the end of the year, they're estimating the accrued revenue on energy days or something like that. So accruals are central. Accruals are based on estimates. So that's why I think anything we do enhance or improve or clarify the definition of an estimate is a just by itself is worth doing. I think here, you know, the collective work here clarifying the differences of what's a principal versus an estimate is important. You can clarify both, you can clarify one or the other, but it's important. I mean, this is kind of life in the closing trenches and preparing communities. You know, you're always into so the principal change, the estimate change, and move on to an error change. So again, any clarification of any part of that process is helpful. I think being clear that a revision of an estimate based on new information is not a correction of an error, that is also an important point we should make in our standards. And again, it's just part of life in closing the books. You know, how new is the new information? Is it the new information proportionate to the size, the adjustment, and so on? And I absolutely love that in revision of an estimate based on new information or new developments is not a correction of an error. I do think, and it's very implied, but again, think in translation, when you say, it's not an error if it's based on new information. We just got to be clear, the new information might be finding an inadvertent error, and that's clearly not what we mean in here. It's new information because the world has changed a little bit. And that's it. Thank you.
Thanks. Chung Wu?
Thank you. Yeah, this paper is a really excellent paper, as Jin Zhao said, really well analyzed, well written. So I have no specific comment, everything is okay. But one thing to clear is that's related to in something in B7, and also in paragraph 32, but B7 is more specific comment. So our committee members, interpreters committee members, and some one staff member suggested a kind of a different uncertainty. So rather than measurement uncertainty, there is some kind of classification uncertainty, recognition uncertainty, every other uncertainty. So they are worrying about whether, based on this kind of amendment, they think there is some kind of change in the past practices according to the ISA. So one specific example they raised is among some recognition criteria, one of them is, for example, probability criterion. So if they change their estimate of that probability from 51% to 48%, then they will stop recognizing that asset, for example. So in that case, this is a kind of a change in asset by estimate or change in principle, policy. So that's the question raised by this, our stakeholders here. But what is our response? You responded here, this kind of beyond our the scope of this project. However, because we've changed some definition of estimate, monetary amounts, and measurement uncertainty. So that kind of things will affect the current interpretation of this kind of another type of uncertainty. So we need to respond properly to this kind of suggestion.
So maybe just on that, I'll say, in terms of the definition we're proposing, we don't necessarily see that as changing the scope of what currently falls within IAS 8 as accounting estimates, and what is accounted for as a change in accounting estimate. So IAS 8, currently the definition of change in accounting estimate very much talks about changes in the carrying amount of assets and liabilities, not about recognition or derecognition of assets and liabilities. Those are governed by the respective other standards. So in the example that you gave on provision, on recognition of a provision, for example, which may hinge on the probability of cash outflows, and if you change it from 51% to 49%, that's not something that's currently accounted for under IAS 8 in any event, because it's IAS 37 that tells you when and how to recognize and derecognize item. So I think that's why I think we've limited our proposed definition to measurement itself, and are not proposing to go into areas where you might use estimate-like inputs to determine whether you recognize, derecognize, or how you present or disclose something. We think so that's why we think it, and considering that, would be beyond the scope of the project, basically.
So what you have just explained is that change is a policy change, because that's not related to the change in the accounting estimate in IAS-A.
What I would say is it's not a change in accounting estimate in IAS 8. I'm not necessarily commenting on whether it's a policy change or not, but it's not a change in accounting estimate the way we are proposing to define it in IAS 8, correct.
But we're also, Chung-Woon, it's not changing what population IAS 8 addresses. Uh-huh. So IAS 8 wouldn't provide help on that point today, correct. And it wouldn't provide help on that tomorrow, but that's no different.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tom?
Just again, I think a really good job and thoughtful response to all the comments we got. The only thing I was going to add to what's been said was I really want to echo what Francois said. I think measurement uncertainty is now in the conceptual framework. It's clear, it's understandable. Estimation uncertainty isn't defined. In fact, it's a bit redundant because estimates are rough calculation. And rough calculation uncertainty stops making much sense. So I would just like to tidy up our terminology when we have a chance, because we don't do it now. It'll just sit there for 10 years, and 10 years we'll be wondering what did they mean by estimation uncertainty. So I just like that idea.
Well, of those 10 years, I think 4 are already up now. How long have we been discussing this?
Round of one. It's a clear plan here. Let's be positive.
Doug? Thank you. I just want to touch upon the point raised by the Francois. Francois talked about the practical expedient issue. And in this paragraph 23, practical expedience the estimate for the reason of cost benefit is not under the definition of estimate of measurement uncertainty. That's why. Say, for example, you have to count the number of goods for the inventory purposes. So you could count physically. However, because the number is so huge, so you do not do that, do not count, but you use estimate how much you have. So that's a kind of just the cost benefit reasons rather than measurement uncertainty, because you can count it imprecise. However, what if the technology of estimating such a physical number has changed, developed? Then you used new technology to count those physical number of goods with new technology. And then you found the differences between what you have done and now you are doing. Would it be the error, accounting error, or would it be accepted as an estimate change? Because in your definition, estimate is only for the measurement uncertainty. That means something like a loan loss measurement. So in the case of loan loss, you need to estimate, but imprecise, it's not possible. So there is a measurement uncertainty. So you would exercise estimate. But in the case of physical number, it is possible to count precisely, but for the cost-benefit reasons, you do not do that. Then that is not within the definition of your estimate. Then here comes your paragraph saying, if it's a measurement estimate, then if the technology changed or new information is not an error, correction of error. So then what if the case I raised, something like you are doing it for the cost-benefit reasons, but you introduced the new technology, then there is a difference. Would it be a correction of error?
So I think we'll take that back with us and think a bit more about it. But my initial reaction off the cuff would be when people are applying accounting policies or determining estimate or just applying their accounting in general, when people decide to take practical expedients that are not explicitly provided for in standards, I think they will be able to do so from a materiality consideration perspective, not necessarily from a cost-benefit perspective, because I don't think IFRS standard provide a general cost-benefit override to applying accounting policy, but people might do so for materiality reason. And if in the future you find that you made a wrong judgment, and you made a judgment about materiality, but maybe you realize later some information has come to light, like Gary was saying, that might suggest that there was some sort of error, then I would think you would treat that as an error. And I think the cases, each individual case could vary depending on the particular facts and circumstances. And that's why I think it's much cleaner to leave our definition, not to get into those situations where people make estimates because of what I'll call materiality consideration, but rather leave the definition at a more conceptual level to say estimates are those amounts that are subject to measurement uncertainty. And not specifically talk about estimates that people might make from a materiality perspective.
Yeah, I understand. But the one tension we may create is that line between measurement uncertainty and estimation for the reasons of cost benefit or materiality. So the cases like loan loss is clear. However, there are many, many cases whether or not I'm doing the estimate because of the measurement uncertainty, or is it because of the cost benefit, or is it because of other reasons? So there might be small tensions because it could change your accounting, whether or not it's a correction of error or just a, you know, new estimation. Thank you.
Well, I didn't raise my tag to respond to Jai White, obviously, but I think there is also a merit in following my recommendation on this issue of a practical expedience, which is to keep these as being changes in accounting estimates when changes occur, and eventually somebody moves from a practical expedient to a more sophisticated nature. Otherwise, you take them out, as I said. But the point I wanted to make when I raised my tag was in reaction to the suggestion that we should aim, when we make amendments, at minimizing the changes in wording to the extreme possible. I think sometimes, and too often to my ears, I hear complaints about our standards lacking understandability. And personally, I'm convinced that the fact that when we make amendments, we don't look at the level of understandability that we could reach in the same effort as we make the changes, I think for me it's a very lost opportunity. And this idea that because you change a word, you have a whole lot of unintended consequences that arise does not convince me. We have a basis for conclusions. We can explain what we do. We have other communication tools that we can use. So really, I mean, I think we have to move away from this idea that we should count to the minimum the number of words that we change in a standard to achieve a particular. Because gaining better understandability is a supplementary benefit, and I think we would be guilty of letting this supplementary benefit go away.
Maybe just building on that, I think while it would be nice to get this done, I've been working on it for a long time. If we're at risk of having a situation where in one standard we've basically got two different words that mean something either the same or very, very similar, I think it would be good to try and be consistent.
Sorry.
Maybe we should dig a little more into the analysis that's in paragraph 21 just to get comfortable about how different or similar we really think these words are, and if there is an opportunity to streamline. I think it's just easier for people if we use the same word if we basically mean the same thing. But if we mean something different, then that's, you know, we don't want to use the same word to mean when we mean something different. But let's just dig into that a bit, because I think if we could streamline it, but it's a good opportunity.
Okay. Thank you for your feedback. We will now move on to agenda paper 26C. Paragraphs 5 to 41 of this paper present our analysis of the key matters for redeliberation regarding other aspects of the proposed amendments. Based on our analysis, our preliminary view is that the board should not amend the existing definition of accounting policies, not add discussion of whether selecting an inventory cost formula constitutes selecting an accounting policy, confirm deletion of example 3 in the guidance on implementing IAS 8, and develop some examples to illustrate how an entity would apply proposed definition of accounting estimates. Appendix C of this paper includes one example of the type of examples that we think the board could develop in this respect. I will now pause and ask if you have any comments or questions on our analysis and preliminary views set out in agenda paper 26C.
I again pretty much agree with your direction of travel here and what you're thinking. Just two thoughts, not that I would necessarily disagree with what you've got here, but just things that I thought about a little bit. I can see how people seem to be perhaps reading more into the proposed changes to accounting policies where we deleted conventions and rules and sort of thought we were doing more than perhaps what we even meant with the amendments. But I pause a little slightly more on the word measurement basis, because my recollection when we were proposing to put that word in was to try and make it more clear, not to change what we mean per se by an accounting policy, but to communicate more clearly what we mean by that definition to people trying to read it. And by adding the word measurement basis, we were trying to reinforce this point that an accounting policy choice is a pretty big deal, high-level thing, and to help that, to use that as part of this distinction between estimates and accounting policy. So I still sort of have some level of appeal that helps in that distinction. So I don't mind if we decide not to change the definition, but that little bit of it I would have thought might have been helpful. And partly on the same sort of theme, I think if we decide not to make these more comprehensive changes to accounting policies, so we've still got these fairly sort of generic words in here like conventions, rules and practices, which are very broad. I still worry that even if we've tidied up the definition of an accounting estimate, it's not impossible that you could have a situation where you're, I don't know, using some sort of technique which you would conclude, yes, it's an accounting estimate, but then you'd look at the definition of accounting policy and say, but is that not a practice or a convention, and therefore does it not meet both definitions? And so I wonder whether there's some benefit to say somewhere in the definitions that if you meet the definition of an accounting estimate, given that we're trying to be very specific about what that means, that it wouldn't be an accounting policy. So it's sort of a bit of a tiebreaker between the two.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. Yes, I'm in agreement with what you're proposing in paragraph 42. It does feel, perhaps for you, disappointing that, you know, you're going not in response to the ED, but you did get lots of comments back that indicated various issues. And on that first part, on A, not to amend accounting policies, the board had good ideas of why to try and make that improvement, but really got strong pushback against making those changes, which I think is why you end up where you are now with the proposal not to make the changes. Sue alludes to an issue where there were suggestions that we really could improve things if we did more work, not just adding words and changing words, but actually did more work on the definition of accounting policy and the definition of accounting estimate, and particularly how they relate to each other, what Sue's saying about the default, making sure that one is defined and the other isn't. I can appreciate that this is where we've arrived at now, based on the feedback, and I know later you're going to ask us about whether things need to be re-exposed. And I think the extent that we can improve on where we are now could be reconsidered if the board was of the view that we had to re-expose. But if the board's of the view with this package, we don't need to re-expose. I think what we're deciding is tidying up what we've got, and I know you're going to ask us on balance, is there enough? But tidying up what we've got, or we're actually spend more time and respond more to that feedback that we got about how to improve things. I agree with where we are at the moment, even though it feels that we've walked away from a lot of the suggestions of the ED.
Gary?
Thank you. Another very well-written paper, except I don't agree with most of it. But it was well-articulated. I actually rather liked the exposed definition of accounting principles or policies. And I sort of note in the course of some people are making the point that you might be expanding the definition of accounting principles. But by clarifying what a basis is and dropping conventions and rules, I cannot see mathematically how you get more stuff swept into accounting principles. If anything, maybe it's neutral, maybe it's less. But I don't see how you get more out of this definition. Noting that the board's objective was to neither add nor subtract, but to clarify, I cannot see how you add to it. Personally, my objective was to subtract, even though it might not be the group of the view of the collective group here in it. So for those reasons, I rather like what we had. To my way of thinking, convention, rules, and practices are all different words to say the same thing. It's something, it's just the way you close your books, as opposed to follow, standards that we promulgate. So I don't think all three words are necessary. I do support with Sue's point, maybe it's a tiebreaker if it's close call, it's an estimate, I think I could probably live with that. But I think, again, going back to my comment from the earlier paper, this is life in the trenches. What is what? We want to encourage every way possible for people to apply our standards easily, quicker, with less fuss and effort. It's a lot easier to do an estimate than to do a principle change or into preferability and argument restatement for comparability and so on and so on. Those are not encouragements and inducements to continuous improvement. either to existing standards to improve your practices of how you're applying them or to apply a new standard. I think it's incumbent upon us to make it easier. And I think certainly not expanding, but perhaps limiting what is a principal change versus an estimate change is helpful. And again, maybe the tiebreaker Sue suggested might be good enough. I'd have to give some more thought on that. But.
Thank you. I was just trying to apply new definition of estimate to the example of inventories selecting FIFO or moving average. So in this case, anyway, if you apply one method, you will have a monetary outcome, output anyway. So either FIFO or a weighted average. So then in this sense, this meets some part of the new definition. This output is monetary amount. Then the definition has the other element, which is monetary output subject to measurement uncertainty. I think the measurement uncertainty, subject to measurement uncertainty, is really important, because in the case of FIFO and the weighted average cases, you are not trying to measure the actual flow of the inventory. You are just trying to put the price for the flow. So therefore, it's simply choice rather than try to measure. So there is a big difference between choice and the try to measure. So in the case of choice, it's a, you know, selecting account policy. But in the case of the trying to make a better measurement, something like estimation of depreciation. So in that case, you are trying to estimate you are trying to measure the actual diminution usage consumption of the PPE. So that is the measurement. The purpose is measurement, but it's quite uncertain. So in that case, you use estimate. Then it will fall to the new definition. So I think new definition works well.
Any other comments?
Okay, so we move on to the next paper, paper 26D. So paragraph 6 to 20 of that paper discuss project direction, and in particular whether the board should proceed with the proposed amendment. Now, on the basis of our analysis and our preliminary views of what we think we could put forward to the board, is that on balance, the expected benefits would outweigh the cost, and therefore we think the board could proceed with finalizing the amendments. We do acknowledge that the amendments do not address all identified application questions. So if the board were of the view that the expected benefits would not outweigh the cost, then our preliminary view at this stage is that the board should not proceed with the amendments and should do no further work on this project. So with that, I'll turn it over to you and ask if you have any questions or comments on our analysis and preliminary views in this paper.
Thank you for this paper first. And as I said on the other paper, I believe that what you would propose would be improvements, clarifications. And when I consider clarifications, I think that leads to savings, because you spend less time wondering what you have to do. So that's positive. Now, as you mentioned in your tee-up as well, you mentioned in your paper that this would not address all of the identified application difficulties. And what would be very helpful to me to come to a decision as to whether there is benefit in moving ahead with this would be to be able to have an insight into what this solves and what remains unsolved. And I think having that as a basis, I would form a view of whether the benefits are sufficient.
So,
given that we know that this is a live practice issue and that people really do, you know, I've been asked on a number of occasions questions about whether I think things are changes in policies and estimates, and even when I had a fairly strong gut feel, sometimes getting there with the words was a challenge. And certainly getting there and not being able to defend why I wouldn't use the words in the opposite direction was a challenge. So even though it would have been nice, I think, if we could have gone a little bit further than some of the stuff we'd proposed, and it looks like we probably couldn't, I think we'll be helping people if we do proceed. And I think securities regulators in particular are keen that we assist in this area. We've been working on it for a long time, so I think it would be good to make these improvements and to get it done.
Mary?
Similar reaction to Sue. I think I think it's unusual, first of all, for a narrow scope amendment for this to be such a substantive consideration. So it's good that you brought it earlier rather than later. And I think it also, if we have a leaning of not re-exposing, I think, as Anne pointed out, it might constrain how much more we try to do that if it were a broader project, we might consider, knowing that would prompt re-exposure. I think your point that many of the changes are excluding things that we proposed initially, those might raise questions about the benefits versus the cost, but I think it raises fewer questions about are we, doing something new that we hadn't had a chance to consult on. And ultimately, from the cost-benefit perspective, queuing up Martin to say, please incorporate what he said before, the point about measurement techniques alone, I think, in the context of a narrow scope project, is a sufficiently significant benefit that I think it justifies going ahead with this project. So that's not specifically the re-exposure comment. It's the benefit outweighing the cost. I think as I think about IFRS 16 and some of the estimates that you have to make to measure the right of use and the liability, as I think about IFRS 17, as I think about some of the feedback we had on our PIR of the IFRS 13 and some of the expected credit loss requirements in IFRS 9, all of those are, I think, putting more pressure on that notion of what is a measurement technique. And so just clarity around that point alone, I think, has a lot of benefit for keeping the system flowing. So to me, it's not a slam dunk, but when I focus on that point, I think that to me is the benefit that makes it worth going ahead with this as a narrow scope amendment.
Barry?
A few perspectives. It's pretty clear from my earlier comments, I support finalizing it. I think, when you step back, this committee group spends a lot of time on the finer points of recognition and measurement and disclosure, but we actually very rarely spend time on some of the most fundamental stuff. What is an estimate or what's a principle? Maybe not as fundamental as the debits on the left or something like that, but we don't spend much time in space like this, but we did on this one. And you sort of hate to see the level of effort and work and put just go to waste and put on the shelf. I think the benefits exceed the cost, and quite frankly, I don't think there's a lot of cost to this. We're not asking people to build new systems. They are to make major explanations. They're investors and so on, or change what they do. So I don't think there's very many costs. So if there's that many costs, quite frankly, you don't need many benefits to justify them. But I think there's a fair number of benefits, although assuming the staff's view not to change the definition of a principal holds, to my chagrin. But recognizing you have an estimate, so you got principles, and there's a gray area of overlap in the Venn diagram. So the extent you crystallize the line of one of them, by knock and effect, you've crystallized to some extent the other. Those are pluses, in my judgment. And I think we should, with all the major marquee projects done, you might debate 17 done or not, but we're going to be faced with many smaller and smaller projects, and I think the level of impact and the level of cost benefits, the scale, is going to be different. That's a good thing. And we said we're going to spend a lot of time on maintenance projects in the strategic plan. This is sort of more of a form of maintenance, than it is a form of groundbreaking type stuff. I think that's a good thing too. And with all the changes proposed, I cannot see a need to re-expose on this. I think we should just go ahead and wrap it up and put it on.
Amaro.
Thanks, Sense. So at this stage, I think I would just piling up a little bit on what has already said, and particularly what the words by, like, wise words, I would say, from Gary. I think, on balance, the benefits outweigh the cost. And also, we've been working on this for quite some time, and I think it's particularly in the measurement techniques, this will be, I think, personally, a huge benefit for the application of this particular aspect on accounting policies. So I think we should proceed.
Dan Chow.
Thank you. As Gary said, that I also support we should move forward as we are at the right direction. IS 8 is very important standard, and accounting estimates, accounting policy, those are very fundamental concept. So I think if we could take this opportunity to clarify something, at least something, I think we are making progress. So especially in practice, sometimes preparers, even national centers, are struggling to, or regulators are struggling to make judgments, what's the estimate, what's the accounting policy it is. So I think I agree with the staff proposal. We can proceed with the amendment, and I think the benefits will outweigh the cost.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of this discussion. Thank you very much. Let's take a break till 4:00.